Welcome to Political Coffee, your one-hour thought-provoking news and commentary as you begin your day. And now, here's your host, Jeff Krupp.
Welcome back to the second hour today, friends, Political Coffee on a Thursday. Again, quick programming note, for if you're just joining us on Monday, Political Coffee goes to just 1 hour because we're going to a great 12 hours of live political call-in talk radio. Yep, starting at this hour next Monday, you're going to get 2 hours live of Brian Kilmeade, and then Stacey Ann's live for an hour, and then 2 hours live of a new talk show host, Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA. Of course, you see him on Fox and other places. And then, of course, we'll maintain 3 hours of Sean Hannity live and 3 hours of Mark Levin live. And I think, unless somebody can prove me wrong, KSLM is going to be the only radio station in Oregon that has 12 hours of live political call-in talk radio. Starts next Monday. Right here. Here's what we're talking about today. Who should get vaccinated first? Teachers or elderly senior citizens? People say over 65 who have underlying health conditions. It was the subject of a snarky leftist column in the Seattle Times, lauding how wonderful Kate Brown was for jumping the teachers ahead of, you know, those 25-year-old teachers that Washington Governor Jay Inslee said he couldn't understand why a 25-year-old teacher who's probably not going to get COVID should be vaccinated ahead of a senior citizen who, if he gets it, is probably going to die. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what James... Anyway, this leftist columnist thought that Kate Brown was just a hero. And then, of course, we talk a little bit about... we just did at the end of this last hour... Kurt Schrader's latest flip-flop, folks. I voted no on the first COVID relief bill, which is anything but. Maybe only 6% of the spending is actually related to COVID at all. The rest of that $1.9 trillion is just pork. He voted no, and maybe he got some pork out of it, because now he voted yes. Do you like flip-floppers in your politicians? I don't. Because you know what it tells me? They're not genuine. You know, that was one of the things about Donald Trump. He was the real deal. He kept every one of his promises. He even shut down government, which he only did once. Because he had to cut that deal with the swamp creature Mitch McConnell. And to make sure all his judges got on the bench. At any rate, I just had to mention flip-flopping Kurt Schrader. I also mentioned something about California's, I mean, since we're talking about schools, California, this is a Gateway Pundit story, California is proposing an ethnic studies curriculum that urges students to chant to an Aztec deity, the Aztec deity of human sacrifice and cannibalism. And it also calls for a counter-genocide against white Christians. That's what they're going to teach, maybe, down in California. As California goes, so goes Oregon. How long until this gets taught here? You know what's kind of funny? Christian prayer in public school is prohibited. But now the Marxists in California are trying to force millions of students to chant to an Aztec god of human sacrifice. No kidding. There's a story about that. And it has some interesting things, like the curriculum materials say to name, speak to, resist, and transform hegemonic Eurocentric neo-colonial condition, whatever the heck that means, in a posture of, quote, transformational resistance. The ultimate goal, the author of this curriculum says, is to engineer a, quote, counter-genocide against whites. The curriculum includes an official ethnic studies community chant in which students appeal to the Aztec gods, including the god of human sacrifice, for the power to become, quote, warriors, unquote, and, quote, social justice. Students seek a revolutionary spirit, quote, unquote, through the incantations. California Department of Education is going to vote on the statewide ethnic studies curriculum next week. The story continues. Stunning, folks. It's also stunning. We'll get into here in a little bit. Senate Bill 296 is going to come out of Judiciary Committee today. It takes away your constitutional rights, including working with other proposed legislation, which may or may not be dead, like House Bill 2238. Remember that from the leftist National Guard lawyer out of Eugene, who happens to be my state representative, Marty Wilde, which supposedly pulled back because it grants the governor the authority, broad authority, to confiscate real or personal property temporarily during an emergency. Personal property like, oh, maybe guns or other things. That bill is supposed to be dead. What if it isn't? What if it works in coincidence with Senate Bill 296? To suspend habeas corpus, in essence, Oregon's constitution, and allow people to be detained. Because there is broad language that, in fact, would allow Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to say that's okay. Going to get into that, too. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. Emails to Jeff at 1220.am or Jeff at KSLM.news. Now, Christopher Bedford has a story in the Federalist entitled, COVID isn't a threat to American kids. Selfish teachers, their unions, and their Democrat allies are. And in this story, and I'll relate to it after I talk to Tim here, I'll relate to you some of the unbelievable things that teachers are saying. And they get a huge bailout, by the way, in this $2 trillion big government bailout bill that Kurt Schrader flip-flopped on. But got to go to the phones. We'll go to Tim. Tim, good morning. Your thoughts. Welcome.
Jeff, I have to first qualify my statement as I have not did my proper research and talked to the superintendent's office about the teachers. I was a teacher. I was a teacher and a coach in Roseburg. I crossed a picket line. My father is the one that bust in teachers into Roseburg to break the strike. Now, here's my uncle was a national president of the Elementary Principals Association. Here's my question. How many people in the most vulnerable are not going to take the vaccination? Because I think that's an important subject to talk about.
It is, like, and I will, and I'll just tell you, I mean, my mother is most vulnerable. She's absolutely in that population, and she isn't going to take it. It's her choice. And I know other people. I talked to my 88-year-old aunt last night. Aunt is how you're supposed to. And she told me she's not going to take it either. So, I mean, that you bring up a really good point. How many of that vulnerable population are choosing not to?
And I think that impacts it a little bit.
Well, it does, but still, does that mean then that for every senior who says, no, I'm not going to take it, that we should let a teacher take it then?
I think it's an issue of what's the issue of them either getting exposed or they exposing the kids? I don't know that, Jeff.
Okay, fair enough. Your other point?
My other point? I'm now an owner of Amazon.
What?
I'll talk to you about what I can do to that. And I made $29 today. So it's not all bad.
All right, you're going to have to explain that to you, because you just lost me.
The price went up $29 today.
Okay. Okay. You're talking stock market. Okay. I get it.
So I'm an owner.
Well, so you should then be able to make contact with Amazon's board or management and express your feelings as an owner of Amazon stock.
And you go through the office of the shareholders relation, and you can get to them real easy. It's kind of like calling your representative.
Except they probably get back to you more than the representatives or the senators do.
That's true.
I shouldn't say that, because I have to say, in all honesty, Tim, most of the senators and when I speak, you know, as a member of the House of Representatives for 8 years, you know, most of them have really good staff, and they work diligently at getting back. Now, what you get often is just form letters back, and that's almost an insult. It ought to be more than a form letter, but that's, you know, depending on the volume of stuff, that's what they resort to it sometimes. Anyway, Tim, thanks. Anything else today?
Now, that's all I'm going to bother you with.
It's not a bother at all, Tim. It's always great to have you in the audience and add thoughtful perspective. Thanks, Tim. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. Chris Bedford writes in The Federalist about the real threat to our kids isn't COVID, teachers' unions. And he starts his article, second paragraph, asking this question, or making this statement. When President Joe Biden made a rare public appearance for a CNN town hall in February, for example, Justin Bellott, a teacher in his mid-30s, asked, quote, why is it okay to make him and his colleague go back to their classrooms and do their jobs? Think about that. Why is it okay? Why should teachers have to work, the young man asked, when subjected to a large class size and outdated ventilation systems? Should all staff, he wondered, be vaccinated before they're subjected to the treatment? Well, Bedford then makes another point, and I'll get to that on the other side of this break, because how would you feel if you're a bartender, hotel maid, or a grocery store worker? Back in a moment.
Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp. Stop the car.
Oops, sorry about that, folks. Can't hit the right button some days. More coffee, political coffee. All right, continuing with the Chris Bedford piece in the Federalist. So teachers in Oregon got the jump ahead of senior citizens, the most vulnerable. But is a teacher's job any more important than bartender, hotel maid, desk clerk, bus, subway driver, gas station attendant, grocery store employee, waiter, manager, deliverman, farmer, rancher, factory worker, carpenter, butcher, trucker, pilot, priest, police officer, EMT, cab driver, electrician, store clerk, barista, mechanic, plumber, stewardess, that's flight attendant, security guard, chef, bank teller? I mean, they're, in fact, I would argue that because they're, most of those people are having to have contact with older people, senior citizens especially, that maybe they, because they're in contact with a vulnerable population, maybe they ought to be vaccinated first before teachers, which are not in contact with a vulnerable population, our children. But even more importantly, now listen to this. Some of the examples of the attitudes of teachers is really quite fascinating. He writes, I know there are states across the country where public school teachers have gone back to work just like the rest of us. I know there are public school teachers who want to go back to work and teach kids in person and who are heartbroken over the damage their colleagues are inflicting on America's children. And that is true. There are lots of teachers that have wanted to go back to work for a long time. He continues saying, but there are tens of thousands of teachers singing a very different song, and theirs is by far the loudest. Why? Because that's what the mainstream media puts out there. He continues saying, these are teachers like the one in Los Angeles, and he has the link to it, who warned colleagues not to post their, quote, spring break vacation pictures, pointing out that it's, quote, hard to argue that it's unsafe for in-person instruction if parents and the public see vacation photos in international travel, unquote. Yeah, duh. He continues, or the one in Los Angeles who sent an email to a mother who criticized the union asking what her race is. Just a week ago, California politicians agreed to pay a $6.6 billion ransom just for the unions to agree to teach again on top of all the federal funds. There are teachers like the ones in Montgomery County, Maryland, who held a parade to protest returning to schools. Quote, you will not sacrifice our lives, disrupt our communities, endanger our students, teacher Jeremy Levin declared. For what? For test scores? Or a few folks to get their free babysitters back? That's what they think of you and your kids, that they're babysitters. Keep the school shut, he preached to the parading cars decorated with children's art. And it goes on and on and on. So who should get vaccinated first? Teachers or senior citizens, the most vulnerable? We'll go to the phones. We'll go to Rich. Rich, good morning. Your thoughts?
Well, I have to disagree with some of the stuff going on. One, Tim has some good points. However, this thing's been so overly hyped on the number of people that are actually dying from it. Most of them are in the nursing homes. Two, the teachers may or may not get vaccinated first. That's up to a local area. But my theory is, if you're not going back to work, you don't get paid, just like everybody else. And their online school is for crap. Half the teachers there are animated. They look like they're taking out an audition for Sesame Street.
Well,
I watch them. I watch them. I'm fed up with it.
Sesame Street. Well, there's some truth to that, I think. I'm afraid to admit.
Yeah, I wish the principals start monitoring some of these teachers on how they're acting on the Zoom classes. It's pathetic. If that's what they're teaching in school, don't pay them. Find some new teachers.
Yeah, the union would have something to say about that, wouldn't they, Rich?
Well, that's fine. Have the unions come out, cough up the people to do it right. If they're not going to do it right, then you kick them all out. Some guy named Reagan did that to Patco once, and it actually helped and cut down on the air collisions. Novel idea.
Yes.
I got to go.
Novel idea. Thank you, Rich. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. Look, teachers all over the country, Bedford writes in the Federalist article, demanded they get the vaccinations first, despite an average and median age, and there's a link to this, more than 20 years younger than the at-risk groups, and still refused to return when politicians agreed. Moving the goalposts to all children despite no vaccine yet proven child safe. Ooh. And in fact, this radical teacher in Maryland watching the teachers parade against going back to school is quoted saying, when the pandemic started, teachers were praised and honored. Now they're being villainized for trying to keep their communities safe. Enough is enough, he said. Bedford writes, and yeah, he's right. Enough from the teachers, enough from the unions, and enough from the Democratic politicians and school boards covering for the pain they're shamelessly inflicting. Enough pretending COVID is the problem when we all know those public school teachers, the ones who refuse to go back to work, are the problem. And enough of this, quote, we are in it all together, unquote. Because we all know that we aren't. 7:30, back in a moment. What do you think? And I'm going to get into Senate Bill 296 right now. Yikes.
Call Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp. Stop the car.
24 minutes to the top of the hour, 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. Emails to Jeff at 1220.am or Jeff at KSLM.news. Mike wrote me an email about teachers' priorities. The teachers' union indicts themselves. They, by their own admission, claim kids can be taught at home via Zoom classrooms. I argue, therefore, that they aren't more important than my grocery workers who help feed us. Senior citizens first. Well said. Now, thanks to Dale, by the way, who is advocating to Senator Bill Kenemer, a Republican who is resisting walking out and stopping a lot of things, not just Senate Bill 554, you know, the gun bill that creates felony traps and takes away your right to defend your family in some places or yourself. Anyway, he writes, Senator Kenemer, walk out on Democrats and their abominations and unconstitutional, freedom-hating, wicked bills. We, the people, will support a stand in courage. Walk out. And he is sending similar message to each of the Republican senators. And there are six of them. Senator Kenemer, Senator Canope, Senator Anderson, newly elected out on the coast. Senator Hansel in Pendleton. Senator Findley in Ontario and Senator Girard right here in Marion County. They all need to walk out. Because Senate Bill 296 is coming out of committee and, heck, may have come out by now. Although committee starts at 8 o'clock, so no. Senator Brian Boquist sent out an email last Friday. And I'm going to read you this piece from him. Quote, "Then there is a sleeper bill that will come out of committee on a pure Democrat vote next week that suspends the rule of law, allows Guantanamo Bay type internment, eliminates habeas corpus, and consolidates power between the judicial and executive branch establishment. The Oregon Constitution is meaningless. This is straight out of the communist and socialist revolutions in Russia, Germany, and elsewhere. Are we a banana republic now? Make up your own mind. Senate Bill 296 enshrines the state of emergency declared by the governor with the Oregon Supreme Court." And that's exactly what it does. All right. So how does it do that? Well, let me share that with you. By the way, kudos to the Association of Oregon Counties who came out against Senate Bill 554. The counties oppose a bill that creates these felony traps for those of you who are carrying a concealed weapon next to, in adjacent property to, some place that some government entity or building or bus stop, who knows, any government property can be designated under this bill as off limits to carrying concealed holders and the adjacent property. AOC Legislative Committee, Association Oregon Counties, opposes it. They voted unanimously to recommend that AOC opposed Senate Bill 554 relating to the local regulation of firearms in public buildings. That recommendation was later adopted by the actual AOC Legislative Committee. Good for them. Now, what does Senate Bill 296 do? Was requested by the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. And it does enshrine exactly what Senator Boquist said it did. Now, Andrew Selsky is an AP reporter. He asked Senator Boquist about, well, I'll just read you the email. He said, "Hello, Senator Boquist. Thanks for this. I looked up Senate Bill 296 that you referenced and watched the testimony on it. The bill originally said that if the defendant is charged with a person crime, the court may set a trial date that results in the defendant being held in custody before trial for more than 180 days, but not than a total of 240 days. This was taken out in an amendment, apparently after defense lawyers, including public defenders, objected. Thanks for bringing the bill to my attention. Do you think it still allows for Gitmo-style internment and deprivation of habeas corpus?" That's the AP reporter then had written those words, those questions, back to Senator Boquist. So Senator Boquist responds, gives the link to the bill, and says, read page 2, lines 13 and 16. Page 4, lines 11 to 15. So let's read page 2. We'll start there. Lines 13 to 16. What does that say? It says, under subparagraph K, quote, "take any other action appropriate to the exercise of the powers specified in this section and other law and appropriate to the exercise if administrative authority and supervision by the Chief Justice over the courts of this state." Now, this is where it gives the Supreme Court the Chief Justice all these new powers. Take any other action, appropriate to the exercise of the powers specified in this section. And there's all kinds of powers there. So what does that mean? Well, exactly, that's the point. Who knows what it means? It is incredibly broad. He then goes, read page 4, lines 11 through 15. So let's scroll down the page and we'll read page 4, line 11 through 15. Now, this is in bolded text, by the way, which means it's being added to the statute. Here's what it says. And any extension of the declaration, talking about disaster declaration issued by the governor, is in effect and continuing for 60 days after the declaration, and any extension is no longer in effect. During a period of statewide emergency and upon finding of good cause, the Chief Justice may extend or suspend any time period or time requirement established by statute or rule, other than three ORSs that are stated there. The key words are may extend or suspend any time period or time requirement. Scary, folks. Then he goes on, read page 5, lines 4 through 6. So page 5, lines 4 through 6 say, a presiding judge may instead order that the appearance be in person. If upon the request of a party, the presiding judge determines there is a particular need for an in-person hearing or that a party has a constitutional right to an in-person hearing. This is about electronic appearances by electronic means. Now, folks, all of this goes around, creates workarounds around your constitutional rights. All of it. Now, you also have to understand how this fits in with other proposed legislation, like House Bill 2238, which is supposedly dead. Folks, as long as it's still a bill that has been given a bill number, whether it's been heard or not, it's alive until the gavel falls and signee die and everything's done for the session. It's alive. And that bill allows the governor, the emergency power, to confiscate any of your personal or private property. That would include your guns. It's a very bad piece of legislation, but so also is this, that allows the suspension of your rights in numerous areas, all under the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, who's handpicked by Kate Brown, and all under the governor's now new and expanded emergency powers under Senate Bill 296. And now let's get into Senate Bill 619, reparations. The interesting thing about this is what has been asked by Senator Kim Thatcher as a legislative council opinion about black reparations. You want to hear this. We'll get to this on the set.
Call Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
We are back 10 minutes till the top of the hour. Some more emails quickly before I continue with Senate Bill 619, Black Reparations. Another Dale writes, talking about teachers getting the vaccine before seniors, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, tapped as Biden's COVID-19 advisor, said that those over 75 years of old age should receive the vaccine last. He believes everyone should only live until 75. This is the guy that helped write Obamacare. That's correct. Absolutely right. Started, Rich writes an email. Well, we'll really miss your 2 hours a day starting next week. I know you have to get to planting, but it is great that you and your insight on for 2 hours. Thanks, Rich. It's very kind of you to do that. Lee writes an email about get shot. Said, I asked several if they're going to get the shot. Then in question form, asked them their thoughts on the facts that the masses have been presented with. Then I add that I know of four that have had severe reactions to the shot. One is struggling and will be in the hospital for a few more weeks, they hope. I have learned that many have made up their mind either way. From the research I've done, the shot doesn't prevent, doesn't create immunity, and may have deadly side effects. I personally don't think it will matter who will get the shot. Lee writes another email about Senate Bill 296. Cool, give a corrupt judge the power to suspend a court hearing when during a period of statewide emergency and upon finding of good cause. That sounds like a good idea. Or does it? Terry writes about schools. Being involved in the public school setting, I have some concerns regarding the loss of learning that all students have been subject to. Schools were shut down last March, losing over 2 months of school, finishing out that current grade year, which begins their education for the next grade level change. Then students had a grade level change. In September, we had the fires and school openings were delayed just when the educational process would be to review the end of the previous school year and start introducing that new grade level material present through online classes that truly were a waste of educational time. Now it's been a year of online classes, limited in-person learning, and now hybrid classes where students are attending school on a half-time basis, if they are attending at all. Attendance has been a challenge, to put it nicely. As we approach the conclusion of this school year, to yet another grade level change, our students in the fall will be approaching losing nearly 2 years of education. Math and reading skills are in the toilet, as testing data that I conduct approves. In my opinion, parents should truly make an attempt to have a do-over year for their children. You know, that's a great idea. I mean, I hate to say it, but that might be the best way to approach this. I mean, it really might. Senate Bill 219 was requested to have legislative counsel, the lawyers that work for the legislature and write the bills, to write an opinion that can be used in a court of law. And she asked this question, three questions. Senate Bill 219, by the way, is the Black Reparations Bill. Which, folks, if you don't know, this bill allows for an annual payment of $123,000 per person in Oregon. If you can prove that you've been here for 10 years or before and that you descended from an American slave, or you've resided in Oregon for at least 2 years, reparations can't be garnished or claimed in a bankruptcy and are exempted from taxation. $123,000 per year. So Senator Thaster asked legislative counsel to pontificate on three legal questions. Number one, does Senate Bill 619 violate the Equal Protection Clause or the Privilege and Immunity Clauses of the United States Constitution? Number two, does Senate Bill 619 violate the Equal Protection Clause or the Privilege and Immunity Clause of the Oregon Constitution? Number three, does Senate Bill 619 violate any other provision of the federal and the state constitutions? Now, the predictable answer will be, no, of course it doesn't, because we wrote it, and we wrote it to be constitutional. It'd be interesting to see what they say. My guess is it clearly violates all of them. Let's go back to the phones to Art. Art, good morning.
Hey, Jeff. It will be interesting to hear how they answer it, since most of the time they work for the Democrats, and of course the Democrats. But I pontificate. We'll see how they answer. I did want to say, this judge, what in the heck is he doing introducing bills, Jeff? If he wanted to introduce a bill as an individual Oregonian, he does have the right to do that. But I question the legality of a judge actually introducing a bill as a judge. What are your thoughts there?
Well, the law allows a judge to introduce such legislation, and it is there's a Senate rule, okay, interim rule that allows this. Okay, it's interim rule 2.13.28. Now, you bring up a good question. It doesn't seem right. I mean, isn't there supposed to be separation of powers, right? Like you said?
That's my thoughts on that. And don't get me wrong here. As an individual citizen in the state of Oregon, I believe he does have the right to introduce legislation. But as a judge, I question the the legalities of it, to put it it's just my thoughts on the matter.
You're right to bring it up, because again, you bring up what I think is a powerful separation of powers argument. How can the judiciary ask the legislature to introduce a bill on their behalf? And that's what it says. It says, at the request of Chief Justice Martha L. Walters of the Oregon Judicial Department. I don't know, of course, you wouldn't ask the Oregon Supreme Court to rule on that, would you?
Well,
somebody ought to, but you.
Yeah, my point exactly, because, putting their name on it kind of puts a rubber stamp on it that it's legal, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think they should be doing that kind of crap. But anyways, if you could, it just stinks to
hire. Great way to end the show today, Art. Thank you. And that's a powerful question, because it clearly is a violation. Dale wrote me an email, said, who pays for the reparations for the thousands of Christians tortured and crucified in Caesar's Rome? Hey, maybe we ought to introduce a bill that does that. Thanks for listening today, folks. We're back tomorrow with Freedom Friday, so join us then. Stacey ends up next. Good morning, Salem.